Welcome to Catalog and Cocktails. It's your honest, no BS, non-salesy conversation about enterprise data. I'm Tim, joined by Juan. Hey, Juan.
Tim, I am super excited. Finally, here's the thing. I can't believe we haven't had our guest on before. This is the one and only Bob Seiner, who is the president and principal of KIK Consulting Educational Services. He's the faculty at CMU for the data program. And if you're in data governance and you have never heard about Bob, then you literally live underneath the rock, because I mean, I don't know how you could have not encountered Bob and all his work. Bob, it is such a pleasure to finally have you on the podcast. Thank you so much for being. How are you doing?
It's great to be here. Wow. That was really, really nice things to say. I greatly appreciate it. I'm doing great. I'm looking forward to sharing stuff about some of the things I'm working on. You know, let's get at it.
I'm so excited to have you on, and I'll just say, one of the first books I picked up on data governance, had to, non-invasive, right? So just thanks for all you do for the governance community. It's been huge.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
So tell and toast, what are we drinking or what are we toasting for? What's your favorite go-to cocktail? What's in your hand?
I don't know if it's my favorite go-to cocktail, but it was the most convenient thing, you know, in the mini fridge that we have in our kitchen. So it's a margarita, a Cayman Jack margarita. Strawberry flavor for this one. So I didn't spend any time. This one, I'm not a good mixologist, so I didn't put anything together for that. But that's what I'm thinking. And what are we toasting to? Well, as I was mentioning a little bit earlier, tonight is game six in the Stanley Cup playoffs between the Penguins and the Flyers. You know, a nice cross-state rivalry here. And the Pens were down 3-0. It's now 3-2. In the best of seven. So let's drink to that. Okay. Let's drink to a victory.
All right. Nice. Tim, cheers. How about you? What are you?
I am woefully drinking a water right now. I'll be making a cocktail in a little bit, but I'll tell you, last night I had a Jungle Bird cocktail. Juan, I know you're on a Campari kick right now, so try to make a Jungle Bird. It's rum, Campari, pineapple, lime juice, and simple syrup. So.
Wow, you guys are real cocktail people. That's amazing. That's cool.
That's the reason why this podcast is called Catalog and Cocktails. I'm starting my Campari kick, and I'm like, well, do some classic ones, but this is an Americano, which is Campari, sweet vermouth, and some soda. Like, this is such a refreshing drink. Like, this is a dangerously refreshing drink.
I feel like mine's very weak compared to the two things that you guys are making.
Well, Cheers.
Cheers, and good luck to the Penguins.
Cheers. Yeah, let's go Pens.
All right, let's kick it off. Bob, honest, no BS. How do you make data governance a catalyst?
Wow, I wonder where that question came from. Well, I just wrote a book about the data catalyst cubed with the number 3 in the upper. I got the book right here. Can I show it?
Yes.
Oh, nice. I like the cover, by the way.
Thank you very much. The idea, so what makes data catalyst, what makes data governance a catalyst? Well, I'm just going to relate a quick story to you. So most of your listeners, if they're familiar with the data governance space, know of John Ladley. John Ladley is a good friend of mine. John reached out to me, well, since we're talking about no BS, John reached out to me and said, there's a lot of BS going on in the data governance space. And that he wanted us to, the word is that data governance is failing. The data governance is dead. It's dying. All of these types of things. John wanted to issue a statement together with me that said, we're going to say no BS. Data governance isn't failing. The way we're talking about it is failing. And we issued a statement back in April of 2025, and it's probably the most viewed posting of mine on LinkedIn in the history of my time posting things. And I post a lot of things on LinkedIn, so that says something. Changing the narrative around, you know, people are thinking that data governance is a scary word. We've got to back away from the term governance. And again, we call BS to that. Okay, you know, people want to replace the term governance with data enablement. And, you know, I'm thinking data enablement is like really passive, right? We're going to enable you to do something, right? It doesn't mean you're going to actually be able to do it. So I started looking for some type of phraseology to use to kind of change the narrative around governance, to kind of carry the message that John and I were talking about back in April of last year. And I started just looking for words to use around governance and saying, we've got it. We don't want people to think it's a passive thing. We don't want to think it's an obstructive thing. Of course, we want it to be non-invasive, of course, but we need to make an accelerant. We need to make it actually accelerate the way that organizations are getting value out of their AI, out of their BI, out of their analytics, all of those types of things. So I found this word, a catalyst, and I thought that's a great word because that really demonstrates the spark that a person can have, that an organization can have. Let's turn governance away from being a passive enabler or something that's going to be obstructive to us, and let's turn it into something that's going to be exciting, something that's actually going to accelerate things to happen. So do I still have another minute or two to answer the question?
Yeah, please. And I'm curious about a lot of people get excited about data like enablement, right? But I do agree it is a more passive phrase. So do you see a difference between data enablement and data catalyst, or is catalyst just a better word to represent what we were kind of tagging onto the enablement banner?
You know, I know you're friends with Malcolm Hawkers too. Malcolm posted something about my book just this week on LinkedIn, and there started a debate between catalyst and enabler and them being the same thing. And I responded to it, I think, pretty well there, that says, you know, a lot of it is the words that you use. There's a lot more excitement. There's a lot more activity and action around being a catalyst than, hey, I'm going to enable you to do something. It doesn't mean you're going to get it done. So now the idea of the data catalyst cubed is something that, again, kind of harkens back to the thing that John and I put together. One of our core statements in changing the narrative around data governance is that our leadership doesn't consider behavior change and change management to be a big part of data governance. And to be honest with you, in my experience in the industry, I haven't seen an organization yet that has been successful with data governance without changing people's behavior. Same thing can be said about AI. And then there's, you know, everybody's talking about data literacy. And I don't really like the term literacy. And I looked for, the industry is actually leaning into the phrase data fluency now instead of literacy. And so the data catalyst cubed is actually accelerating data governance with change management and data fluency. So we can't do data governance on its own anymore. And again, John and I talked about this in our statement. Change management is an underrated, or let's say an underutilized discipline in a lot of organizations. And so again, the idea of the catalyst is let's be that spark. Let's be that accelerant to make things happen. And let's raise it to the power of three.
So the power of three, just to make sure I'm clear on this, it's data governance, change management, and data fluency. Are those kind of the three elements?
Those are the three elements. So the equation is the data catalyst cubed is equal to data governance multiplied by change management and multiplied again by data fluency. I'm actually giving a presentation next week in San Diego at DGIQ and EDW, where it is called Accelerating Data Governance with Change Management and Data Fluency. And I'm going to be talking all about that. I'm going to be talking about this is something that we as data practitioners, if we don't get this right, the narrative is going to continue to be that data governance is failing. So this book was intended to kind of hopefully like be a smack across some people's faces and say, come on, wake up. This is something that we've got to change or... Mm-hmm. It's just going to be the status quo.
Well, I really like that you're combining these three things together because, you know, data governance obviously is a discipline that's been around for a while, but it does get associated with a certain set of activities, right? Data fluency has become more popular lately, especially as self-service and things like that, you know, and citizen data science and things like that has become more popular. But there are, I'm sure you've seen this too. There are certain data leadership or data functions where they say they're data governance and they're kind of only doing data fluency, which is only one part of the picture, right? And then almost everybody who really steps to the leadership mantle realizes and knows that change management is so important. And yet, to your point, like either they don't understand enough about change management and what it means to do good change management, or their leadership, the board, the CEO, like they don't understand that that's part of the need and the mandate. And so they don't give them kind of licensed and leash to do that. So I think this is hugely valuable to actually kind of connect these three things together.
And well, and the interesting thing is I do not claim to be an expert in anything, even in what my kids grew up to be. I'm not an expert in that. I can't claim anything. I'm not a change management expert. Change management has been a discipline that has been around forever and ever and ever. And there are people that know, and so I'm doing a little bit of research on it. I'm learning a little bit about the psychology of getting people to change their behavior and those types of things. So please don't quiz me on things that are intensely change management related. But it's, again, it's something there. Most likely there are people within your organization that do have some knowledge about this, especially if you're a large enough company. If they don't, then I think to your point, Tim, this is something that they should have been thinking about. Because if AI isn't going to change your culture, I don't know what's going to change your culture.
Yeah.
AI is already changing or changed your culture.
Well, and what's interesting is, some of the organizations I've been talking to, the data and AI kind of governance organization, their first like serious tangle with change management came when, they started to roll out Copilot or some of these different things. And they were like, oh my gosh, like we actually need to, it's not just about fluency. It's not just about AI governance or data governance, right? There's another piece of this puzzle here we have to get involved in. And it's not just us, right? It's HR. It's, the managers in the field. It's, it's a lot of things working together.
I'm waiting for somebody to reach out to me and say, Bob, we got to issue a statement about data literacy and changing the narrative around data literacy, because people don't want to be recognized as being illiterate. Mm-hmm. And the way that data literacy is being posed in many organizations is that it's training. Okay, so you've been through your data literacy training and now you're data literate. You may be able to read a dashboard. You might be able to read a report. But are you smart enough to be able to ask the right question about the data that's on that report? I mean, becoming fluent is honestly becoming confident in how the way you define, produce, and use data. And I always have said back since book one that you shared, the non-invasive data governance book, there's only three things people can do with data. They can define it, they can produce it, and they can use it. People say, ask them, oh, they can do this, they can do that. No, typically it falls under one of those three categories. If we just recognize who those people are and we help them to be better at it and we help them to understand better how their behavior needs to change and what it means to them and what it means to the organization and what it means to become more fluent and knowledgeable in the data, it's not going to happen overnight and it's not going to happen unintentionally. We need to intentionally tie these three things together.
So can you run through an example of, let's call it a world before a data cube and the one afterward? So, we all live like all these silos of, like, I get your point is like people are doing data governance and then they're not doing change management, or if they're doing it, it's separated from here, from the governance, and the data literacy, fluency is separated, right? So it's like this, all of this needs to be combined. What, can you give us an example of like, here's the status quo and here is how you would actually improve that and the value get in the value.
Well, a friend of mine pointed out, since I've always talked about the data catalyst cubed being that equation of multiplying this times this, if you agree with that statement, or you believe that that's a true statement, if any of those things rests at zero, the whole equation becomes zero.
That's it.
Right? So if you're not fluent in the data, if the people don't understand and can't become confident with the data, it's going to be very hard for them to change their behavior. And you're going to have a hell of a time governing the data at that point. Right? So I thought that was a very novel thing to think about. If you set any of those, if your governance is zero, you're not going to change behavior and you're not going to get people to be more fluent. So are there examples? Well, the fact is that the book just recently came out. Even though my publisher actually hit the button and got it to be published in December, it really didn't come out until January of this year. So I would say that every organization that I've worked with that has been successful in governance has had a rating, let's say, not a real rating, not a real number, but has a rating in each of those three areas. None of them has been set at zero. So one organization that I worked with, a food distribution company, they were having problems with their nutritional information and their ingredient information. And that was very important to them. Well, they finally realized that the reason why it was so bad, the data was so bad, is that everybody had their own way of doing things. So if we could get them to understand the value of doing it consistently to them and to their company and to our company, and by the way, they'll keep their contract with us if they do that. You know, I mean, it's something that they really need to do in this day and age. They're, getting people to understand, so the confidence level, getting them to change their behavior and act the way that has now become standardized, they wouldn't have been successful without doing that. That's just one example.
Yeah, you know, and I love this. This was a great aha moment I just had right now when you're saying like, oh, it's multiplying. So if one of them is zero, then everything is zero, right? I mean, this is one of the moments like, duh, it's kind of obvious.
Yeah, you can be awesome at data fluency, but if the change management is zero, then it's zero.
I'd argue kind of what I've seen is that people are doing, like, the one that's missing is the change management most of the time. That's what I would predict or come around. I'm curious to know, out of those three, in your experience, you've been doing this for so long, right? Which is the one that you see?
I've been doing it for a long time.
Which is the one that you see that out of those three, the one that is like lacks the most, and what are the quote unquote low hanging fruit, high value things that people can do to improve?
Yeah, I want to look at this from two different perspectives. The one is, what are people talking about? Okay, people are talking about change management more than anything else right now, I think, even more than data governance and more than data fluency. Data fluency is still in a matter of speaking, there's a kind of a transition going from data literacy to data fluency, because people are still thinking data literacy programs. I won't name any companies, but a lot of companies have big data literacy training programs within their organization. It's great if you're a one and done type of a shop, but if you really want people to live with the data, they need to become fluent with it as well. So is there one? I've been working in the data governance field, as you said, for quite some time. And when I get brought in to work with an organization, it's typically focused on helping them to stand up a governance program. So that's usually, I think, I see organizations that are really wanting to do the right thing in that. Change management is lacking. Fluency is still just, they're just coming around to understand it, I think. But again, if any one of them is zero, it kind of rules out everything.
I mean, at the end of the day, like the one and done is not something that's going to, that doesn't work. I mean, like,
it's not going to change behavior.
Yeah, definitely. So I think kind of having a true fluency tied, it needs to be tied to the change management. Mm-hmm. You're saying, one of the things when it comes to changing and changing behaviors are the incentives. What are, in your experience, what are the types of incentives that you've seen the organizations put in that's
you got to give them margaritas every afternoon starting at what time is it? Where you are? I think that's one of the incentives. Data governance isn't really something that's meant to be fun. Okay. So incentivizing them, you know, I just had a conversation the other day with somebody and we hearkened back to the days that, you know, there were casual Fridays. I don't know if you recall those days. When I wake up in the morning, I barely ever put pants on it, you know, let alone go into an office, you know. So there's not things that you can incentivize people that way. I think the way that we need to focus on it is to focus on, where do they struggle in their job? Where, you know, what is taking them the most time? If they, you know, if you ask them a question of, you know, kind of in a perfect world, what would you be able to do that you can't do now? Or what could you do that you can't do now if you knew the data, if you really understood the data? I think we really need to be able to demonstrate the value to people that way, is to get them to understand that what's in it for them. You know, that's an old thing, a WIIFM, what's in it for me? We need to get better at sharing what's in it for them. And if it makes their life easier, if it gives them the ability to do things that they would like to do, it's going to be seen as a positive to them.
But
I just want to add one more thing. I'm sorry. The term governance means something, right? It means the execution and enforcement of authority. That's how I define data governance, is the execution and enforcement of authority. So at the end of the day, the government is not coming to anybody and saying, follow this if you'd like. And at some point, they're going to be asking for demonstrable proof that that these regulations are being followed. Even privacy and protection, you know, those types of regulations as well. If you can't demonstrate, I've worked for organizations that had a difficult time demonstrating that people knew the rules around protecting sensitive data. Something as simple as that.
This is actually an interesting, I had a little bit of an aha moment, Bob, as you were just kind of talking through that, which is that, you know, I think, you know, I think sometimes people, when they look at the governance space or they participate in the governance space, they kind of like, conflate these three things with each other. And I'll say they especially conflate kind of like data fluency and data governance together, because if you take data fluency and data governance and maybe even change management and you try to like mash them together, you end up with the effect of kind of weakening governance, where it's no longer about enforcing, right? And it's a little bit more like, well, we're encouraging, we're trying to teach people and make them understand, right? Or we want to put some incentives out there and see if we can get people to change their behavior. And that's actually maybe, I mean, you can disagree with me. I'm curious if you disagree, but like, maybe that actually is like a bad idea. People need to stop doing that. Like, kind of data governance is one thing. Data fluency is another thing. Don't feel like you got to smash them together and dilute it into like kind of one mixed thing.
You know, I wrote an article a long time ago called the Data Governance Bill of Rights. Okay, but it wasn't the Data Governance Bill of Rights. It was the Data Governance Bill of Rights, the word rights within quotes. And the whole concept of the article was getting people to do the right thing, getting the right people to do the right thing with the right data at the right time, hopefully leading to the right conclusion most of the time, right? So people are already engaged with the data. So we don't need to tell them that we are asking them, you know, certainly the whole concept of decision rights isn't something that I've gotten a lot into, but we need to get the right people involved in the right time with the data. These people are already governing. When I give a presentation at a conference, I haven't done this in a while. Maybe I'll do this next week in San Diego. But if I've got 50 people in the room, let's just say, I'll start the presentation by saying, how many of your organizations are governing your data? Okay. A couple hands go up. Not everybody's hand goes up. There's nobody like wildly waving their hand saying, yeah, we're governing our data. I said, okay, put your hands down. I said, I'm going to ask that same question again. And I want everybody to raise their hand. And of course, people look at me cockeyed and say, okay, because Bob asked, we'll do it. Okay, how many of your organizations are governing your data? Everybody's hand goes up. The fact is, and I said, look around the room. The fact is, governance is not something that's new to your organization. Okay, this is something that's already in your organization. People are defining, producing, and using data every darn day, right? We've got to get them accountable for these relationships to the data. We've got to get them to now bring fluency into the equation, just because that's all about governance, is the execution and enforcement of authority and getting the right people involved at the right time. Fluency is, they've got to, you know, this is catalogs and cocktails, right? Metadata and the understanding and the context around the data is incredibly important to improving people's fluency around the data. If that is part of your governance program, you're on the right track. It's not a core part of everybody's program.
So you mentioned metadata, context, semantics kind of at the end there. Do you see that, you know, and of course there's a lot of AI conversation now, and Juan and I are big participants in that too.
Like
AI is hungry for this context and this metadata, right? Do you see that as having a big kind of an incentive or positive impact on the, in sort of the governance world right now?
What's AI stand for again? I can't remember. We haven't talked about it.
Are you familiar?
you know what? AI can certainly help to create some of the metadata. Again, if you, I'm not sure if I'm going to answer your question correctly or not, but I think that metadata, that AI can help you to generate the metadata that you need to help you help people in the organization improve their data fluency. I think also, boy, there's still so many different ways that AI can become a part of metadata. The truth is, I'm not, it's going to be interesting to see next week what some of the vendors are doing with their products and with AI. I'm meeting with one of those vendors tomorrow morning just to have kind of a pre-conference meeting. I don't know how they're using it. I know that people have the ability to ask it questions. Where's it getting its context from? If you want it, do you ever watch the TV show, The Morning Show?
I saw like the pilot of it. I haven't seen, but I kind of know the
Jennifer Aniston, Aniston and Reese Witherspoon. Watch the last season where their AI engine goes rogue publicly and starts saying things that got people fired. That's how I think the season ended, is that their AI solution went rogue. Okay. Mm. Do you want people working with understanding of the data that is not vetted, that is not approved? Again, you've got to take with a grain of salt everything AI gives you. You can't just use it verbatim. We're not there yet. I hope we never get there.
Well, we have a choice.
We're getting closer and closer. That's for sure.
One of the things that I've been bringing up recently now is, at the end of the day, we do all this data work. We do all this governance work. For what, right? just having all these policies, all this stuff, and people doing the right thing, right? Like, there's a purpose for this. And it's like, there are organizations who need to get work done. There are particular business functions, and you need to have the work done. So you need data to get that work done, right? You need to get those insights to get the work done. The governance around there is so you can get that work done. And you said it yourself, it's like, what's in it for me, right? What's in it for them? And I think one of the stuff that's missing, and this is where I'd argue, I want to push this more, and if it's not just data fluency, but this is actually where data teams need to also have the business fluency to understand your consumers of this, what's in it for them. And that helps you also realize, we're not going to go boil the ocean and go do all this stuff. It's like, we're going to do this type of work because there's a particular reason and outcome that we're trying to go achieve. And that's how we're a catalyst. Not only an enabler, but we're a catalyst to make sure that we're accomplishing those outcomes. Because otherwise, what happens all the time is that, oh, I'm delivering this beautiful dashboard that people can go trust and so forth, but how is this providing value? What is the action that you're doing after you generate those insights? And I think we live so much, kind of my little soapbox right now, so we live so much as data being the center of the world, where we need to start really having this shift of where work is the center of the world and data is an enabler of that. Governance is enabled. You need all these things, but let's not forget that. Why are we doing it? It's so we can get work done.
Well, and so here I'm going to do a plug for my book.
Please do.
It's here. I got to show it. It wouldn't be good on my shelf here. I talk about governance at the point of use. Okay, so where decisions need to be made, where actions are taking place. I'm not saying putting a new process together. I'm talking about taking processes themselves are a form of governance. They are steps to follow. They may even tell you who needs to get involved in those steps.
Yeah.
So what was your question again?
There was no question. It was just me sharing my observations
around about how much data is so much at the center versus getting the job done, huh?
When we end up having all these conversations about governance, is that one is like, it's governance not for the sake of like governance is for the sake of getting work done. That's one. And then another point I want to make here is that we should take the three things that you talk about, right? So governance, change management, and data fluency. I wonder if we also need to add more on a fourth one, which is the business fluency. The data teams need to understand what the business is doing, understand the work processes, so they can also be a collaborator to say, I'll tell you what's in it for you.
Do you know how difficult it was to get Amazon to approve the cube, the exponential character in the name of the book, let alone, what do you call it even, quadrupled, I guess, if there's a fourth element to it. It's interesting because I wanted to share a little bit about some of the things that are going on with the book. So this concept of the Data Catalyst Cube, I think, is really intriguing, just the idea of bringing the disciplines together. But there's also the idea of people being a data catalyst, being a person in the organization that actually can spark and accelerate things to happen within the organization. And in fact, I'm putting together a certificate program, not a certification program, but just a certificate program that says you've been through education of things that were in the book and things that I've even discovered since the book has come out recently that really will help people to become that catalyst within their organization. It could be a chief data officer. It could be a business analyst. It could be a data modeler. It could be anybody within the organization that wants to truly understand the relationship between these things and how it's important. So I don't know. I'm doing some market testing. What do you think of that as an idea?
Here's the interesting thing now is that you take somebody who reads your book, right? And I'd argue that my position of this business fluency, that actually is tied to the change management, the changing behavior, because I'll be able to go change the behavior and of the team and how what we're supporting. If I understand have empathy with those of my colleagues to understand what's the work that they're trying to go do, how are they doing it today? What would life look like afterwards? And with a magic wand saying, you got all this stuff to do, and then let's work backwards from that. And then you use that as the way to incentivize your data team saying, look, This is what we should be focused. This is what we're really working on, because look at how we're going to really impact the business. So it's not that everybody needs to understand how the business, because I mean, let's be honest, right? Large organizations, you're going to have a large separations. People who are boots on the ground, they're going to be very separated from how decisions are made. And you can't expect everybody to understand that as much as you'd want to and stuff. That's not going to happen. You really need to have those leaders or middle management, whatever, to be those catalysts. And I think they will be shining the whole change management, the changing behavior side.
I'm excited about it. It says, you know, what am I doing in my retirement? I am still very interested in having some impact on the industry. I mean, the concept of non-invasive data governance was very unique at the time, even though it's really just a label for a way of doing data governance. The catalyst idea is, again, a way to change the narrative around governance, is that we've got to get people to consider that governed data, governed AI leads to positive outcomes, right? We can't just measure outputs anymore. That was all well and good. No, it actually was never well and good, but it was there for a long time. We've got to measure business outcomes at this point, or people or governance, it's never going to fall by the wayside because of that story that I said. Governance is taking place. The question is, how formal is it? And if you can move it from informal to formal, you can move it from inefficient to efficient. You can move it from ineffective to effective. You can move it from inconsistent to consistent. Just let's get rid of the letters IN and let's make it formal. Let's make it effective. Let's make it efficient and let's make it consistent.
Formal, effective, consistent. I like this. And well, there was one more. Formal, effective, consistent.
No, I just say that it's informal now. That was the point of my asking that question for people to raise their hands, is that there is governance taking place. It's just informal. Somebody is putting a definition to your data. Somebody is producing your data and somebody is using your data. There may be people that are doing two of the three or all three at the same time, right? Okay, we've got to know who those people are and we've got to help them to do it in a formal way. And by doing that, we will become much more efficient, effective, and consistent. That's my mantra, I guess, or one of them, I guess.
I love this. I'm already thinking about it. There should be a cool t-shirt about how you have those informal with
a hat. No, I don't.
All right. Well, Bob, we have so much notes here. Anything else before we give our takeaways? Anything else that you want to share with the crowd here?
No, I think that there's still a lot of work to be done in this industry. AI, it's an interesting time for me in my career, but AI in the last several years has really brought up the discussion of AI governance versus data governance. And AI governance is a lot about governing people's behavior associated with AI too. Now, the data is going to do what it does. AI doesn't really give a hoot where it gets its data from, right? So I think that, AI governance, it's going to be a fascinating time for several years. So, I look to continue to be involved.
This is a great point that the AI governance is people think about, oh, it's also governing the agents and the models and stuff we're doing. But
it is. It's all that, right?
But it's all that, plus also the people, the usage and all these things.
It's just like a lot of it's like data, right? If you replace the word data with the word AI in the execution and enforcement of authority over AI, it's the same thing. We want to make certain that it's being used in an effective way. But you know what? I've used this analogy before too. If you drive down the street in the U.S. on the wrong side of the road, you're going to get a ticket for that if you don't run into somebody and kill yourself first or something like that. There's rules of the road. I mean, people need to understand what the rules are, why they're there, and they need to build it into what they do. It's just a part of, it's non-invasive.
It becomes part of your culture, becomes what is normal here.
It's embedded in what you do. It's not over and above. People think data governance is something new. That was even going back to John and my statement, John Ladley and my statement. One of the first thing is the way people are talking about data governance is all wrong. They think it's brand new. It's not brand new. People are already governing. They're just not doing it well.
Goes back. It's been informal, inefficient.
It's informal. It's inefficient. Right. It's all those things.
All right. Wow. So much to cover here, Tim. Take us away with takeaways.
All right. I'll give my top takeaways, then I'll pass it to you, Juan. So we started off with honest, no BS. How do you make data governance catalyst? Everyone should check out your book, because you go into Data Catalyst Cubed about these three keys, which are data governance, change management, and data fluency, and how they all need to come together. And you mentioned that kind of the idea that really sparked this was that you're talking with John Ladley, who I know many in the space know for his governance work. That there's a lot of BS going on is kind of, and that a lot of folks are thinking that data governance has failed, or that it's scary, or that it just needs to become data enablement. And you mentioned that as you were thinking about the words and the concepts that really capture more of the active approach that we want to take, that catalyst and catalyzing really kind of stood out. And that's where kind of this data catalyst concept came from. Mm-hmm. Data literacy is very predominant right now, and really data fluency is a much better term, and it emphasizes something much more around not just knowing how to read a dashboard or something like that, but being able to actually know, what are the right questions to ask? What are the right actions that I should take based on this information? And change management is one of the most underinvested pieces, and folks need to spend more time on that. They need to understand it more. It's a discipline that's been around for a long time. And then governance itself doesn't have to be something scary or bad, right? It's important, and it's something that's already happening. Last I'll mention is, you mentioned kind of data fluency, change management, data governance. It's multiplication, right? They multiply with each other. That's why it's cubed. And that's because if any one of them is zero, then everything goes to zero. And so I think that's a good way to think about this. Yeah. So, Juan, what about you?
Okay, so we talked about the incentives, and you're honest, yes, data governance isn't necessarily meant to be fun. There isn't really a casual Friday for governance, right? So we got to focus on where do people struggle within their job. So in a perfect world, what would you be able to do that you can't do now if you really understand that data? You could really leverage that data. So it's really understanding the what's in it for them, what's in it for me, because that's how we're gonna make their lives easier. Governance is the execution and enforcement of authority. And you talked about the governance bill of rights. Use the right data at the right time, at the right way. You need to get the right people involved with the data, hopefully making the right decisions. And I love what you said, like, you ask people, how many of you are governing your data? Not everybody raises their hand. You're like, no, raise your hand, because it is already happening. You just need to know how it's happening and so forth. We talked a little bit about AI and how, yes, AI can help generate that metadata and so forth, but it's really right now AI is able to ask all these questions, but we need to understand, where is this context coming from? How is it vetted, approved? What is critical and so forth? And I mean, that's governance right there. AI governance and data governance, I mean, at the end of the day, like that definition of governance applies regardless of data and AI. And AI governance is a lot about human behavior also. That's an important aspect too, not just governing the AI agents and the models, but also the humans who are using this AI. And we kind of, I brought up this whole point of like, why do we do governance and data? At the end of the day, work is at the center. And you said, well, we have this governance at the point of use, which is where decisions are made, where actions are taking place. And I think we also talked about how to think about this work at the center, we have people are actually going to be those catalysts. And I think the people who are going to be doing those change management are the ones who are going to understand the business and be able to go influence on the business side and also the technical side. Because we can't just measure outputs anymore. Outcomes need to be always the focus of doing this. And then for me, the big thing I love is governance has been informal, inefficient, ineffective, and consistent. And we just need to take the in away so it can be formal, efficient, effective, consistent. And this also applies to AI. And don't forget, governance is not a new thing, and it's always been there. And just the way we do governance needs to become our culture. This becomes our norm. How did we do?
I have this feeling that you guys did this before. Did you do this before? That was brilliant. That was great. I mean, I think you covered it really from beginning to end, the things that we talked about. I like to... There's got to be ways to make this interesting to people. I think the no BS approach is really perfect, as long as the no BS doesn't include no Bob Signer in the equation. You know, when people ask
me, carve it out for you.
People ask me if KIK are my initials. I say no. KIK stands for Knowledge is King. My initials are BS, and I didn't want to call myself BS Consulting. Even though, you know, no consultants, it's true.
Yeah, BS Consulting wouldn't work as well, I don't think.
I don't think so. But the KIK, I immediately thought of the two Ks pointing different directions. And, you know, it's the way my mind works, I guess. But I think we're getting to a point where people are ready for a new message. I'm hoping that, you know, one of the reasons that I'm thrilled that I'm doing this podcast with you is that I'm trying to reach audiences beyond the ones that I've reached with the first three non-invasive data governance books. Okay, I like to, because data is a part of everyday life for everybody. Yeah. If we don't, we just need to do a better job of governing it. And there's people that write and talk about the poor governance that takes place every day. Just in everyday life, it's.
And I think a lot of people are hungry for that knowledge, right? I think there's a lot of people who, you know, the cool thing about big data and data science and kind of the big, and now AI, the big waves that have been happening is it's brought so many new people and interest into the data realm. And all of these people, they implemented those AIs, they implemented those data lakes, and they're like, but it's still not achieving. And there's still another mile to go here, and now they're learning about governance.
And I'll actually say that it's younger new blood coming in who are coming in through AI, and they're doing all these things, and the POC work is so cool. They're like trying to go deploy this in production, and they're like, oh wait, we need to go do some checks and guard. We're like, yeah.
Think about the common everyday non-business person. If they watch the news. Just watched this afternoon. I think they were talking about a company that was just starting to do AI. I always tell companies not to do data governance. What does that even mean that you're doing data governance? I mean, if it's built into what you do, okay. the way that the way the social media and the media talk about AI is not helping the equation at all. So we're just there as the practitioners of what we do, trying to help.
Bob, to wrap up, three questions for you. What's your advice? Who should we invite next? And what resources do you follow?
What's my advice? Just keep an open mind, I guess. That's the thing. Don't walk away. I hope if you stay stuck this long into the podcast that you're not walking away just with one way of thinking. But people think governance needs to be difficult. And I start with a completely different premise. I start with a premise of you're doing this. We can do it better. Okay, so don't be as scared about it. What was the second question? Who should you invite?
Yes.
Well, let's see.
Or topics.
You've already had my friend Anthony Augman on, I think. I just talked to Anthony earlier today. I think you should have John on if you haven't had him on. Or maybe even Tony Shaw from Dataversity. It's an evolving world with education and training these days. And I think he's right in the middle of it. So I think he would be a great person to do that. We lost one. There he is.
Oh, there you're back.
And what was the third? What are the resources that I use?
Yeah, what resources do you follow? I mean, obviously, let's go get your books.
Well, I mean, as far as resources go, I've been very fortunate that people who have written books recently have come to me and asked me to provide some feedback on them. So I have a shelf full of books still that I need to get to that I haven't gotten to yet. I use things like LinkedIn quite a bit. I think it's a nice social network, but it's becoming very noisy as well. There's a lot of garbage that seems to be coming through LinkedIn. I seem to have stuck with it thus far. So where I am in my career, I think I'm going to continue to do that. Substack, if people are familiar with Substack, I just posted a series of blogs about emerging governance tactics, things that people wouldn't be thinking about, like using resistance as a way of innovating. You know, when people resist, there's energy there. I wrote about that in the book too. Use that resistance. People aren't going to resist unless there's some energy there. So using that. So things like Substack and LinkedIn and who to invite. Well, like I said, there's Anthony and John, and I think you know most of the best people, right?
Yeah, we haven't had John, and then actually also Tony Shaw would be great. I think Tony has given so much to the community.
He's been a big helper to me in my career, so I appreciate him.
Bob, this has been a pleasure. You heard it from us. Like, we each independently had a bunch of aha moments. I'm really hoping, I'm sure that our listeners...
You sure it's not the cocktails that are doing that? No?
Oh, I did finish it. So.
It's the knowledge, because it's king.
Knowledge is king. That's right, yeah.
Bob, you have a good one. Thank you so much. And looking forward to meet up in person soon.
Cheers.
Take care. Thank you, sir.